order. Our agenda today includes House Bill 2495, House Bill 2784, House Bill 2796, and House Bill 2820. I've been informed that on House Bill 2784, Judge Leonard of Eugene is here and needs to get back to Eugene. Is that right, Judge?
Yeah, I'm in the middle of the
Well, let's get you up here and... yes. Why don't you come up front, Judge Leonard?
Maybe counsel would like us to...
Not testifying on 2495.
That's right.
In fact, where is Representative Judge Leonard? Please go ahead on 2784, and then I'm going to return to the usual agenda, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. House Bill 2784 would make a crime a number of acts that presently are not articulated as crimes in Oregon Revised Statutes. And in summary, what the legislation would do would be that it would make it a Class C felony for an individual to threaten or by force or by any threatening letter or communication endeavor to influence, intimidate, or impede any juror or any officer in any court of this state or officer who may be serving in any administrative hearing in the discharge of that person's duties, either jurors or officers, or that it also makes a crime individuals' attempts to influence, obstruct, impede, or endeavor to influence or obstruct or impede the administration of justice. Also makes a crime injuring a juror or a juror's property on account of the juror being or having been a juror. And additionally makes it a crime to injure an officer of the court or officers of administrative hearings. And this was sponsored by Representative Hostica at the request of Lane County. And I come today to express support for this legislation and express the support of the other judges in Lane County for it. And I would indicate that probably all of the judges, or most all of the judges in the state from time to time, are either the targets of threats or the targets of threatening behavior. And additionally, there are many jurors that feel threatened or feel intimidated by service as jurors in cases, or feel intimidated after their completion of their jury service. This legislation has as a model federal statutes that make the same sort of offenses a crime.
Is there a USC side on that by any chance?
No, I believe it's 18 USC 1503, but that's off the top of my head.
That's pretty good, too.
Thank you. I saw it this morning. And it relates to existing Oregon law in a number of respects, but in my opinion would broaden the coverage, would specify acts that now are not specified as criminal, and would also enhance the penalty for commission of these acts, making these commission of these acts a felony, a Class C felony, whereas some of the acts that may arguably fall within other statutes are misdemeanors presently. But I by no means intend to say that what we're doing is duplicating existing legislation. I think that it adds to and covers situations that are not now covered. I think that it's appropriate for a number of reasons, and I can relate, and I have related in an attachment to written testimony that I have presented, an experience that I had with an individual who was particularly threatening. I can talk about incidents that other judges have had, but I think that more broadly, it's appropriate now because personally I have seen, and I think that other people that have been involved in the judicial system for longer than I have seen that the nature of crime in the state of Oregon is changed, predominantly or mainly because of the number of drug offenses and drug trade that's going on. I see that the personality of criminals that come before the criminal justice system has changed. I see that people now are less stable. I see that people now are more ruthless in their behavior. And I see that this is a reason to take a look at this legislation to stem what is a threat to the judiciary, is a threat to jurors, and
can I ask you
to court staffs.
Judge Leonard, on a relatively technical question, as I read the bill, I think it's a good bill, but I'm uncomfortable with the language, line 6. That seems real clumsy to me. Does that, how does that strike you? Corruptly or by threats?
I agree. I do think it is clumsy. I don't think it reads very well.
Yeah, I mean, I just looked at the USC, and it's not that the federal government does things that good.
Okay.
But they, whenever corruptly or by threats of force. I don't know what that means exactly. I mean,
I think that corruptly adds language there that is going to have to be interpreted, and I'm not certain whether that creates some vagueness to the bill that may be a problem later on. I can agree with you that it is that it's probably awkward. I don't know if I can come up with off the top of my head a suggestion to make it less awkward right now.
Representative Calori.
I have based on my own lack of experience, explain the word influence in this case.
In this context, I would think that somebody attempts to affect the outcome of a proceeding or the outcome of some process that either a juror or a court officer is involved in.
This has to be a threat.
Well, I'm just having a hard time. I mean, influence sounds a lot like bribing and those kinds of things as opposed to threat of force, and so that's why I was having a hard time putting it in the context.
Well, it says corruptly or by threats of force or by threatening letter or communication.
Well, no, that's on that line. But
next line, endeavors to influence.
Yeah.
Intimidate or impede any jury. I would think that the words influence and intimidate would almost be synonymous as they're read there.
Influence and intimidate?
Well, if you're influencing by threat, that seems to me to be a synonym of intimidate, isn't it?
I think that perhaps that may be true.
Yeah, I know. Representative Clore, how do you feel about it? I mean, it's.
Well, I think that it seems to me it adds. It just looked to me like it adds quite a bit, and it all, frankly, I think it seems a little out of context for the examples that were used or the other part.
Brian, Representative Baum.
Mr. Chairman, we're researching the issue quickly.
Yes, I was just starting to look. Maybe we could shortcut this. I know we have jury tampering and so forth. I was wondering what is not covered here. I'm sorry for being a little bit late. What is not covered here that is not already covered by existing statute?
Well, if you're talking about jury tampering, for instance, that would be a situation where a juror is actively engaged sitting as a juror in a trial. This legislation would, in one instance, would broaden that to jurors that have been a juror on a particular matter. If you look at line 12, it talks about injuring a juror or a juror's property on account of the juror being or having been a juror. That's a situation that is often feared by jurors, that there would be some sort of retribution for their service on a jury. As I mentioned, I believe that this does. The legislation does correlate with other statutes and perhaps in some regards may create some duplicate coverage. However, I think it's analogous perhaps to the type of situations that we have in the criminal statutes right now where, for instance, a situation of harassment may also constitute a crime of assault in the fourth degree or vice versa, or criminal mischief may cover a situation where there's also a theft. But each statute adds a little bit of protection and adds a different statement as to what it is that the state has determined to be unlawful behavior. I think this legislation is an important statement going to the integrity of the judicial system and not only judges but their staffs and also to jurors. I would ask one thing that and I'm rather new to the legislative process, and I noticed in signing in that amendments are to be proposed within or prior to 48 hours prior to testifying. I did notice and wanted to suggest to the committee that the bill be amended or words be qualified so that it is clear that the staff, a judicial staff of a judge is included within those people deemed to be officers of the court. You have situations where you have judicial assistants, bailiffs, reporters, and other clerical people that are subject to the sorts of behavior and conduct that this bill would outlaw.
Your Honor, how does this relate to obstruction of justice? I have the statute in front of me, and it's the obstruction part here says, on line 10, says, influences, obstructs, impedes, or endeavor to influence, obstruct, or impede the administration of justice. And then we have the obstruction of justice statute 162.235, which says a person commits the crime of obstructing governmental or judicial administration if the person intentionally obstructs, impairs, or hinders the administration of law or other governmental or judicial function by means of intimidation, force, or physical or economic interference or obstacle. Class A misdemeanor.
Yes, that's 162.235.
What about a repealer here? I mean, this seems to go beyond 162.235.
It does, and that would be intent of it, to go beyond it. Not only go beyond it and broaden the coverage of what is now provided for in 162.235, but also enhance the penalty, raising that conduct from a Class A misdemeanor to a Class C felony.
But when you're sitting there, when somebody's bringing the motion, how are you going to differentiate between the two on a demur or a motion? I mean, to me, they sound terribly similar. One's a misdemeanor and one's a felony. Yeah, Representative Hostica, I'm sorry I didn't see you there. You want to sit up here? This is your...
I was just going to introduce Judge Leonard, a good friend of mine, and let him carry the bill.
He's doing fine. Okay. back to the revenue there. Judge Leonard, I don't know. What about that? Do you want that particular provision repealed? I just see some confusion there.
It covers and it includes matters that are contained in 162.235. It adds the language contained in line 6 of the House bill, which makes it a crime to do that corruptly or by threats of force or by any threatening letter or communication. So it broadens, I believe, the coverage. Whether that conduct, if it's alleged under 2784, as opposed to obstructing governmental administration, is subject to some sort of legal challenge, whether by demur or by a motion to dismiss, is something that I guess I'm not prepared to render an opinion on. There are some statutes, and I know that it's an area that is not completely resolved in Oregon. As to the effect of two conflicting statutes. But I guess I can't add much more than that without doing some research on the matter.
Well, I think it's a good bill. It's just I'm trying to, you know how irascible these attorneys are going to get in these things. They're going to...
That's exactly why I'm here.
Representative Courtney, what's your pleasure on this? Representative Baum?
I think you're going to have to repeal the statute that we've been talking about here and replace this one and add the amendments that he wants to include staff, because I don't think officers is enough to include staff. And remember that if you're going to, like we do with a lot of things, if you're going to intimidate a member of the Joe Doe public, is different than intimidating a judicial officer or a juror in an official proceeding. That's why the C felony would be justified.
Well, I would think that one of the ways we might do it would be to take 162.235 and amend out of 162.235. Let me try this on you. The references to the judicial side, and then essentially use this statute as the judicial obstruction and coercion statute, and making it a higher grade to, now we're going to start putting angels on pinheads here, more of a crime to obstruct and intimidate a court as opposed to other parts of government.
Carving that out and leaving intact 162.235 may be a task, and leaving anything there without having to add
Well, the staff business I'm very comfortable with.
Yeah,
but that's,
yeah, I since 162.235 talks about judicial function without any additional qualifying language as to what a judicial function is, I think you have, there's the difficulty in, if you carve out 2784 and attempt to amend 162.235, perhaps that's a possibility, but in doing that, that surgery is going to be a little bit difficult, I think, in determining what is a judicial function. That's one of the difficulties on 162.235, I suppose. I've never had it addressed to me, nor have I ever seen it, as to what is a judicial function and how far that extends, whether that extends only to something which involves directly a judge, whether it's something that involves the court system as a whole, including staff members, clerical people. I don't know, and I'm not aware of any cases that may shed any more light on that. I think that in that way, or looking at that problem, I think that 2784 perhaps is a clearer statement of what it is that we are trying to make a crime. I certainly would be happy to address this in a letter to the committee if that would be assistance.
Judge Leonard, I think it's a good bill, and I see the need for it, but what I would like to do is perhaps have you get to take a look at that obstruction statute, 162.235, and then try to perhaps get together with counsel and try to put them to, and as I sit here, I almost think it might be, my easiest way might be to pull the references to obstruction out of the bill, if we're going to make it higher. That's one alternative, but so that these things can be read consistently. And again, you're going to have to read these someday and come back to haunt you. So we can do that. I think it's a good bill, and you can do that. And we'll return to it as soon as possible. We'd like to move these on, but I don't know if we can do it right here. That, as you call that,
I think that's difficult, and yeah. I think that it probably requires some
that surgery.
Some research.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, I came replete with war stories about threats from the Lane County judges. I will not bore you with them, but let me assure you that everybody in Lane County wanted to have me
true
tell
that
you.
True that you, like most of you, have unlisted phone numbers and have to go to that extent. I've been told by other judges.
Well, my wife made me take my name out of the phone book after the incident that I related to you in the attachment. I think most do. I know that some don't. I think for peace of mind, I feel better now not having my number and address in the phone book. But I know that one judge was relating to me this morning the hesitancy he's felt at different times in leaving the courthouse late at night. We've had a number of assaults on the vehicles of different judges. Notes being left, damage being done, things like that. So it's not comfortable, but I also don't think that we are necessarily that much different than a lot of people that are involved in government. I think everybody in the Michael Frankie situation is certainly a very tragic reminder that anybody that chooses to serve the state or government in any number of capacities is probably less secure than they were before they made that decision, and that's part of the job. But I think that providing some protection and making a statement to the public that the judicial system and law enforcement is going to protect these individuals is important. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anything
very
else?
Much. Thank you. Okay. Okay, why don't we shift back to our regular agenda. 2495 is Representative Miller, Representative Dix's bill, and Representative Dix, I believe, is on his way to Chicago, and Representative Miller is on his way to Portland. I'm a little bit lost for the bill. I don't support the bill, and I brought it up as a courtesy to the two members. I'm not going to move the bill, and I don't see five people here, even if all four of you simple mathematics.
You want a motion to move it?
Well, you can have a motion to move it, but I'll certainly take the motion, but I'm not going to vote for the bill, so I don't think it'll do that much good unless you just want to have a... We've got five people here. It's going to take five people to get out of the sub. Let me ask you this. Do you support the bill?
Yeah.
Do you support Representative Baum?
Yeah.
Representative.
All we need to do is drag in Mannix or something. We'll be in business.
Or you could do it as
what
a courtesy.
What you could do is a courtesy. Mr. Chair, because you are a courteous person.
Same lecture I gave Representative Baum about 2 weeks ago.
You can extend that.
Well, Representative Courtney, why don't you make your motion, and I will.
Move House Bill 2495 to the full committee to pass, Mr. Chair.
Representative Courtney moves House Bill 2495 to the full committee do pass. Any amendments to this bill?
I realize, Mr. Chair, you can try to slaughter it at full committee.
I know well enough to leave this bill just alone, Representative Courtney. With the proviso that the chair is merely voting for this as a courtesy to get it to full and will not vote for it in full committee or on the floor, I will send it to full committee. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Yes.
Calori?
Yes.
Courtney?
Yes.
Ryan?
Aye.
All right. You guys owe me one.
I think we should all thank the chair.
Okay, 2796, Judge Barber. Okay, he's a resource person. Okay.
This is a big.
Okay, is Judge Barber just here as a resource, or okay, you don't want to testify, or?
I have not been.
Okay. I usually like to get you gentlemen, ladies. Yeah.
Want to go back and recall it so you can.
We
go
would. If I might hear. Representative Mannix, would you like to? Would you mind if House Bill 2495, would you, the chair having moved in the vote on the prevailing side, would now move reconsideration of 2495. Any objection to reconsideration of 2495? Okay. Now, Representative Courtney again moves 2495. Representative Mannix, are you all right in this bill? You're getting me off a hook here.
He's embarrassed. He really doesn't want to vote.
Okay. Would the clerk call the roll again on 2495?
Representative Baum?
Representative Lori? Courtney?
Yes.
Mannix?
Yes.
No.
One more.
Oh, Representative Baumann, do you want to vote on 2495, the new dancing bill? It's 5-1. Yes, and...
No, I think I'll hold my vote until I have a chance to review it.
Oh, okay, very good.
We don't owe you anymore, Mr. Chair.
You don't owe me anymore.
Unthank the chair.
You got to unthank the chair, okay. 2796, why don't we start with Brenda Peterson. Hi. Oregon Department of Justice.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Brenda Peterson representing the Oregon Department of Justice Appellate Division. With me today is Assistant Attorney General Nancy Womack, who is currently assigned to the Corrections Section of the Oregon Department of Justice. I handle post-conviction cases on appeal. Ms. Womack handles post-conviction cases at the trial court level. We're appearing today before House Bill 2796. I've prepared written testimony in support of that particular House bill. I don't want to go over the written testimony I've prepared, but I do want to emphasize 2 points this afternoon. The first is simply an item for consideration by the committee, and that is that that the committee may wish to consider expanding the time limit from 120 days, which is currently proposed by the bill, to perhaps a longer period of time, such as 6 months or 1 year. And I suggest that not because I think in most cases a petitioner can't put his case together in that period of time. I do think in most of the cases the inmate or the criminal defendant will be able to put his case together in 120 days, but there may be some sort of a notice problem with the inmate not realizing he has the right of post-conviction relief. And so we're not necessarily suggesting that there be a longer period of time, although we're suggesting that it is perhaps an item that should be considered. The other point I want to make today is that in Section 2A of the bill, it refers to the date the sentence is executed. And I think in the majority of the cases that the Oregon Department of Justice sees, a sentence in fact has been executed and the petitioner is serving time in one of the state correctional institutions. And that, although that's the majority of the cases we see, a criminal defendant who was placed on probation and has never had a sentence technically executed can still seek post-conviction relief. And for that reason, we are proposing an amendment to that section of the bill to change the language to read, date judgment entered in the register. And I've attached that proposed amendment to the written testimony. That would make House Bill 2796 consistent with the appellate statute, which is ORS 138071, which provides that that is the period of time that we look at to determine whether a criminal defendant has filed his appeal timely within the 30-day period of time. The final point I wish to make today is that I am authorized to represent the committee on behalf of the Oregon District Attorneys Association that they also support House Bill 2796. At this time, I'd simply open it up to questions for either Ms. Womack or myself.
Again, summarize for me the real need for this. I mean, what in short, why do we need this bill?
The older these cases.
That, I apologize.
The older these cases get, the harder it is for the state to defend them. We have one right now that the conviction is more than 10 years old and the transcripts have been destroyed. That shifts the burden of proof back to us, and that will be difficult without
the transcripts. That's unusual, though, isn't it, ma'am?
No, well, 10 years is unusual. We do
have
cases.
The transcripts being destroyed is unusual, isn't it?
We run into it every once in a while. It's not really common. The particular case that's involved, the man is a career criminal, and we may have trouble winning this case. If we don't win and the DA wants to retry him, we've got a 10-year-old case to retry again. It's a robbery case. We also run into cases where the original counsel, the original defense counsel, has died or has left the state. We've got a current case right now with an attorney who is dying, and we haven't been able to obtain sufficient evidence from him. Some of these attorneys change jobs. We might have an attorney in California whose 6 or 7 year old file is in the Lane County DA's office, wherever they store their files. They've got to get the file. It's hard for them to remember, particularly the public defenders who try several of these every year. Puts a real burden on us to defend them and a real burden on the district attorney's office to retry these cases.
I don't want to, you know, Representative Baum does a lot of these, and I've done some of them. I don't remember them as being that easy to win.
No, I'm the primary.
I mean, with you sounding, it's not like you guys are really getting beat up on it, but that's a little bit different from my experience.
Well,
Representative Baum, and this is your bill, and I should have let you testify, and I apologize.
Well, let me just tell you that the reason I did this bill was, having been court-appointed on close to 100 cases, finding only 5% or less to be meritorious, I found that as time goes on, you sit there and you think about things you're going to appeal on, and most of those things are frivolous. And I think that this would have been a good way, once this bill is out there and it's in the inmate population, they'll know about it. And they'll start being more prompt and we'll have less frivolous stuff down the road. So actually, my intent was to bring all these matters of resolution faster.
Mm-hmm.
and to save, I felt it might cut down on post-conviction and indigent defense costs by a percentage in the neighborhood of 20%. My limited experience would have told me that 20% of these claims would have gone away because of the time, if we had any kind of time limitation rather than open-ended, because some of these things are filed frivolously. They really shouldn't have been filed as habeas corpuses or not at all. There's some concern that if new evidence arises or something down the road, well, if it wasn't available at trial, there's always a relief of habeas corpus, but this would preclude him from challenging for a constitutional violation of the statute of competency of counsel, of any irregularities in the proceeding that weren't brought readily within the year period or whatever period we settle on. And plus, it is in response to the public frustration of being able to drag. Now, I know that it may be a federal problem, but being able to drag on these appeal process on and on and on. You can only file for post-conviction relief once in Oregon. And once you've done it, you've waived it. So we already have a limitation on this relief. This just further limits it to a time-specific period, because if you don't file the fact that your attorney forgot to interview your alibi witness and didn't call him, and you forget that in your petition of relief the first time out, you can't.
Post-conviction relief, grounds for relief that were not raised in the original or amended petition are deemed to be waived unless the court, on hearing a subsequent petition, finds grounds for relief asserted, and I'm quoting from the statute, which could not reasonably have been raised in the original or amended petition. And the question here is how this statute might come into play, both when a post-conviction relief petition is timely filed within the 120 days contemplated by the bill, and also when it's not. My suggestion would be an amendment to the bill to allow issues brought up on a post-conviction relief past the 120 days if they could not reasonably have been raised before that time. That would be one way of dealing with that particular problem. And without that amendment, there'd probably be a greater chance of lots of litigation as long as post-conviction relief is available in some form.
Thank you very much, Mr. Linden. I'm sorry for bypassing you.
Why don't we again to go to a 2820. Representative Baum, you're one of the sponsors on this bill. And then is Mr. Jolly here? Yes, Mr. Jolly.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
I'm sorry, Mr. Yes, Representative Mannix. Yes. Oh, wait, we did ask him before you were in. Yeah, in fact, I tried to call him up the witness stand.
All right, thank you.
And teach him to come here, boy. It's just good. Go ahead, Mr. Jolly.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Judge William Jolly from Municipal Court in Willamina. I'm representing the Oregon Municipal Judges Association. John Bennett sent a letter in. He couldn't be here today. He's the president of our association, and he wanted me to be in here to present the letter and see if it will be read into the record.
Certainly, Mr. Jolly.
Do you want me to read it in? You have it?
No, I don't. But why don't you? I do.
You.
Why don't you let me read it, Mr. Jolly? Dear Representative, I was informed that the hearing's bill is scheduled for March 9th, 19, at 1 p.m. Unfortunately, the court docketing, et cetera, et cetera. Therefore, I request this letter be introduced. It's my testimony. I don't think anyone can disagree that community service is a viable alternative, a sentencing tool for our courts, and more importantly, a cost-effective sanction when compared to jail or even fines. Jail is all costs and fines. While they do create a revenue flow, require a great deal of administrative staff to monitor and collect. Community service programs do require some administrative effort, but little of it has been absorbed by our court. The agencies accepting these people are the ones who do the bulk of the ministry and absorbing the cost. In 1988, my city's court community service program resulted in 1,004 hours, it's quite a bit, of labor being put into a multitude of projects with an economic gain to the agencies involved of approximately $5,020 based on the standard equating one work hour to a $5 per hour wage figure, which is not the minimum. The hours contributed could have been significantly higher if the statute allowed us to sentence people to community service in a non-voluntary capacity. When fines are used in a sentencing tool, we all too often end up with people paying minimum amounts of $5 per month against their fines. At the lowest rate, some of these people will take years to pay off their fines. Because of these extended fine payment periods, non-paying problems continue to arise on a repetitive basis, causing us to go through all the costly gyrations necessary to get a person back into court and on track again. This situation exists because statutes require that fine payments be based on ability to pay. The end result in far too many instances is that the fine does not act as an effective deterrent, rehabilitation, or punishment tool, nor is it swift and sure, as some theories say court sanctions should be. Being able to order community service would, as you readily see, be an effective way to address this problem, help us get out of the collection bureau business. It is for those reasons stated above that I feel passage of this bill would help both our courts and communities. Although this bill is prepared, does not seem to address them. There are two other items that we may need to address at this time. The first is the addition of language to the statute that would preclude ordering community service if the person is not physically or mentally capable of performing services. The second is the clarification of who is responsible for workers' compensation if the person is injured while performing community service. This is unclear under the present statute and has led to a problem using community service as a sanction, not only by courts, but with the juvenile justice system. I think that Judge Bennett would have been loath to ever open that Pandora's box. We'll leave that up to Representative Mannix if we ever get to this. Who does cover them now?
Workers' compensation does not apply unless you are working for someone's been, now I'd want to take a look at whether or not someone was given an opportunity to work off a fine. That's one thing. If they're given an opportunity to, if community service, I could see someone arguing at some point that if their person is working to work off a fine, that they're actually an employee. There has to be a contract of hire, too, implicit or explicit. Probably find an exemption in the system.
And well, if not, I find it amusing that in this particular situation, the state, that in other particular stations will use a large club to include everybody under their power, under workers' comp. In this particular situation, what is sauce for the goose is not sauce for this particular gander. Mr. Jolly, go ahead, please.
That's the extent of my testimony.
Okay. Any questions, Mr. Jolly? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to return to these bills at some other time, unless there are really strong objections. Although I would at this time like to hear a discussion of 2820. I'd have no strong feelings about it. Does anybody have any strong feelings about 2820? I'd be very frank, not particularly in love with the bill, but anybody have any insight into it? I mean,
well, Mr. Chairman,
we're kind of talking about it.
I'm pretty comfortable with debating the policy on it and seeing what members of the committee. Frankly, I'm comfortable with the bill. You're not.
I guess. I have this. Let's walk through the scenario. You say to a defendant A, community service as an alternative to incarceration or fine. But then they say they must consent to donate labor for the welfare of the public.
That's what we're taking out.
Yeah, I don't know why they wouldn't consent. I don't quite understand. What?
I just had a comment.
Yes, Representative Bauman.
I remember when I was
sitting at council table for the Multnomah County DA's office. We were calling voluntary community service when the judge was saying, you shall perform voluntary community service. In fact, involuntary servitude is clearly unconstitutional.
Jail is, so, though.
But the promotion of work and the products of that work being obtained on an involuntary basis, even on a coercive basis, because I suppose it's not as coercive now as it might have been, or might have been when there was jail space available as the alternative. Is the issue.
How do you feel about the bill?
I'm uncomfortable with it, and I'm sorry that I missed public testimony on
it. Oh, it was just the letter, essentially. And that's, I'm a little notwithstanding Mr. Jolly's testimony, I'm Representative Brian, you were involved in this type of thing administratively.
Well, most of the ones I'm familiar with, agreed to, you know, anyone that you would want out there doing community service also agreed to it. I mean, you know, there's got some interest in it, but I'd like to think about it a little bit.
Would you? I mean, I don't have, you know, Representative Baum.
I have never had anybody.
You're on the bill, but
did not refuse to a judge to oppose conviction. Same kind of guy that said, I want to go to jail.
Service, I believe it.
Community yeah. Service. Sorry, I got something else in my mind. I've never had anybody refuse to do it. Only on occasion when they wanted to have the sentence executed on. Yeah.
You know, it's so ironic that that we've had this, the second bill, that this is truly a contemporary bill. I mean, you would not have this bill 15 years ago, would you? I mean,
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Manning?
I think we need to put this in context, too. A little while ago, we heard and passed on a bill where we said that the judge doesn't have to wait, doesn't have to ask the offender's permission to sentence him to probation.
Yeah.
And our big point,
that's just, you know.
And our big point was don't give him the option. It's the judge who's doing the sentencing. I'm very comfortable with the notion of saying when you take out that sentence, if you take a look at the rest of the law, the community service is being provided as an alternative to incarceration. That means the judge is giving the person the option, 30 days or whatever, or community service, or as an alternative to a fine. So again, the person has the option of paying the fine, or it's an alternative to probation. Again, the person has the option. Then it says, or as a condition of probation. And in a way there, you do take out the option part, and you're saying, okay, I'm going to put you on probation, but you must perform X amount of community service.
May I, Mr. Chair, again?
Yes, I was trying to run through this.
Your, my concern about this point, and again, I'm drawing back to the program I have some familiarity with, and it is beautifully run by a woman whose name is Susan Kaser, and she is, she runs the Alternative Community Service Program in Multnomah County, and she needs to have some kind of a filter for people going into her program. In other words, she would prefer having people in her program who at the outset have been given a choice, because she's really not a jailer. She really runs a program where she's placing these people back in the community with an expectation that they perform some kind of service back to the community. And I think it's very valuable. I think it's been acknowledged. I'm really disappointed in a sense that she's not here. But then again, I'm not clear on how much good changing the language of this bill is going to make. I know I attended this seminar. In fact, I was a presenter at the Red Lion Inn Lloyd Center on the this Employment and Crime, an Agenda for Change conference. And none of the people who were presenters there are here asking for this. In other words, I'm not sure that the connection between this change and the sponsorship of using work instead of jail has been made clearly to the subcommittee. It makes me just a little bit reluctant. I mean, I think it's reasonable for the sponsors of a bill to produce advocacy on behalf of the bill. And there are way too many bills, and they're sponsored for way, you know, too many reasons to do that on everything. But I just, you know, the burden of proof hasn't been met in this case.
Representative Courtney,
isn't this simply another alternative to rehabilitation?
I want to encourage community service.
Well, no, I wasn't. That's already been spoken to. I'm talking about the fact that someone should work off their sentence. We don't have within the walls or within prison very many facilities now for any kind of meaningful employment. We all know that, right? Whether you're talking about, right? You're looking at me sort of regularly talking about OSP or OSCI or even the lesser the counties and things. And it seems to me that this might be viewed. I'm starting to move a bit on the bill now. I really was sort of up in the air and didn't like it, and then I'm going back and forth. But I'm just throwing this out as another discussion topic that maybe it is a meaningful alternative to rehabilitation if there is value in work and that it can be shown. I'm coming from the article that I think you were looking at, Representative Bauman, that some think that getting work as opposed to just sitting in jail all day or even in and out is a way to help the individual in terms of making them ready to, hey, you know, fix them up. And I'm just offering that, so I don't know. I guess all of a sudden I agree with Representative
Brian. Let me ask you this. Representative Mannix, if you were sentencing someone, would you want to impose community service on somebody that didn't want it?
Well, I think I was going to say Representative Bauman's point about that is well taken. I had not thought about that factor. Do you want someone out there working in community service who hasn't at least consented to donate labor for the welfare of the public? That character may be so mean and nasty that they're not willing to, if they're not willing to say, I consent to donate my work, then I want to hit them with a fine or imprisonment. I don't want them doing community service. And because, you know, if they're not of the nature that they're willing to consent to it, what
a work gang type.
Yeah, and now, and there is a bill coming in, by the way, that will require that prisoners be either rehabilitated or educated or worked. We can deal with that issue, but
floating around somewhere.
I think that 2 points. I think Representative Bauman has made 2 excellent points that give me great pause about this bill. Point one is the one I already just discussed. Second one is, well, where are the advocates for change here? To quote Governor Attia, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. There is one advocate for change, but I don't see a lot of other municipal judges or circuit or district judges coming in.
Well, I'm a little
backing off, Mr.
Uncomfortable
Chairman.
Our reputation has been frightened as it is, and sending out a bill, and someone sends us a letter is a little far. You know, send a letter, get a bill. Representative. Why don't we do that?
Just hear some more before we get ready to do something, or just let it lie there. I mean, you know.
And it might indeed. This is something that other questions I don't want to pursue now. But I had some ideas. What if you imposed upon so and so, you know, in lieu of the fine, that'll be 5,000 hours at Portland Recycling. You know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you have a choice between, you know, and you don't want to go to jail, but you have a choice between a very, very. Can you object to that? I don't see anything in the statute. Maybe there isn't even a statute. You know, that's why I run into these people doing community service, Portland Recycling Team. But that's for those of us who recycle. Why don't we set this one aside for a while, and maybe let some counsel. Do you have any info, insight into this?
May I suggest, Mr. Chairman,
yes,
that we simply let the primary sponsor know that we've set it aside, and if he has some additional information, We'd be happy to hear it again.
He probably didn't know this was going on today. I'm sure he was busy somewhere else.
I understand that, and that's why I'm just suggesting that.
And with that, we're going to close this up today, and yes, Representative Bryan.
Here, just to note, with regard to the sponsorship, it was at the request of his municipal judge.
Yeah. That's it, you know. We can dance on out of here now.
Well, Mr. Chair, before we dance, can I, speaking of dancing?
Yes.
May I record my no vote on House Bill 2495?
Yes. Chair asks unanimous consent that Representative Bellman be allowed to record a no vote in House Bill 2495. That will not change the outcome of the bill. Make one of us feel a lot better, though.
Two of you.
Thank you very much. Representative Bellman recorded as a no vote on 2495. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we're through for the day.
What's the chair going to do with some of these bills we've talked about?